What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Why? What's that from?
The song Ski. You probably don't know it.
No.
If you did know, I'd actually be really confused and shocked.
Who sings it?
Sexy Red.
Oh, no, right?
No, it kills me. And it's on all of my TikToks. I've been listening to it all day, and it's literally stuck in my head. It's like the Ia from Gunna song was stuck in my head for like 2 months, and now it's Ski, and they're not even words, they're just noises.
That's so funny. No, I don't know who that is, but speaking of, like, you'd be surprised if I heard of that song. One thing that is really surprising, I feel like the most out of character person I listen to is Rico Nasty. Have you heard her music? It's like, I'm gonna smack you right in the face.
And it's, and it's so weird because, like, everyone I know who listens to Rico Nasty isn't someone I'd ever think listen to Rico Nasty. Like,
really?
Finn is Rico Nasty's biggest fan, and I was like, what? But she's more like emo than rap, which is interesting. But no, that's definitely interesting.
I never thought she was a rapper because remember when we saw her perform at NYU? She came in this so out of
You mean when I got my face stomped on?
That's actually a hilarious story. Your luck sometimes makes me because, okay, anyway, there was this concert, just to give some context to the story, there was this concert that NYU held where Rico Nasty, along with like Roddy Ricch and a bunch of other really popular performers, came up and did their thing. And it was really, really crowded. This is a very popular NYU event. And it was sanctioned, too. Like, it wasn't, like, unofficial. It was, like, NYU, whatever. So me and Sydney and our friend Finn, who is actually on the podcast season one, go check out that episode. Sorry about the quality. We all went together as, like, a little threesome. And Sydney was getting, like, abused in this space. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, so many bad things happen to you. Do you remember it was that girl with the really frizzy hair that was flipping it in your face the entire night, which I have a video of. It's really funny. And then Sydney, like, fell on the ground because people started moshing. I'm like, why are you moshing? This is an NYU event. Oh, you know how much I hate mosh pits. A mosh pit once happened at GovBall, and
Let me explain. There's a mosh pit. Then there's, like, two rows of people, a gigantic space, and then Sarah. And she was like, they're actually jumping on me. I need to leave. I was like, girl, they are literally so
It gave
so
me a real-life panic attack, too, which is funny, because I was like, this is not panic attack worthy.
No, because part of me was like, I didn't know how to get a situation, because, like, if Sarah was, like, in the actual mosh pit, I could, like, take her out of it. But it was happening, like, at a distance from us. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know what to do with the situation. But I do think that moshing explains the decline of men. Mm-hmm. No offense to men. Not the decline of men. Yeah.
I think if you mosh pit, you're dumb. Sorry. Like, yeah. I don't understand why
you're
doing that.
No, actually, the decline of men. Because if you really think about it, I say this every episode, but, like, there was a time men used to hunt and gather and build houses from wood, and they would, like,
and be mature
philosophers and think about the existence of life.
Mathematicians.
Like, they used to, like, find math numbers. Like, they used to, like, invent like E equals MC squared and like all that goodness.
They used to discover gravity.
Like they were throwing apples and stuff. Like they were doing the thing back then. They were philosophizing. Now they pay. They pay money. They pay like $400 to go stand outside in the parking lot while some guy screams on stage, like immobile words, muttering words. And then they bang their heads together. Like they know. Like I don't think you've ever seen a mosh pit. Let me explain it to you. They all get in a circle. Some random little whoever on the stage is like, mosh pit. And then all the guys, I don't know what turns on in their heads. It's like their eyes change colors.
It's true. You know how like when a shark comes to attack you, apparently their eyes turn black? It's like that.
Yes. And then they all rip their shirts off. Like don't know what that part's about. Literally, yeah. Then they just start hitting each other and they start like bashing each other's heads, and then that's how they enjoy the song, I guess. The thing is, you can't even hear the song because you're getting your head smashed. Then someone's head starts bleeding and everyone's like, oh my god, stop. Or they break their arm, then they start doing it again. And yeah, that happened at this concert and I got a really bad concussion. But whatever.
I mean, she fell so hard. I mean, I've never seen somebody drop that hard in my life.
So it was like dominoes. Like, yeah. People fell on top of me and I was the last one to fall because I'm 5'1". And so, yeah.
Yeah, and then you were not only were you the last one to fall, but since you were the last one to fall, the most people were on you because everybody fell, like, back or forward. So everyone, like, you had a lot of people on your back, your legs, your feet. So this girl could not get up. So one of our friends had to actually yank Sydney up by her hair. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen because that just goes to show how small and light Sydney is. It's like she just goes, boop, like.
Not call me small. It's like, you know that TikTok sounds like, then my head hit the wall. Boom.
Yeah.
It was like that, but it was the floor of a concert venue. And it was nasty.
So gross. I don't know how you didn't get like rabies or something from that. Mm. That's so nasty.
That's like in, I was talking about this with someone. I don't know why this came up in a conversation recently. Where everyone was talking about how like bad lice was when they were in like middle school. How like it was like a pandemic. I remember, like, someone on our cheer team got lice. And, like, obviously with cheer, like, I don't know if it was just our team. We were always all over each other. Not even, like, when we were, like, dancing or stunting. But, like, in between practices, we'd just all be laying on each other. So they called our entire team out of class besides me. And I was kind of like, what's going on?
It's the prize party. And so
I'm, like, texting everyone. I'm like, why is everyone in the office besides me? Because, like, my entire friend group was in cheer. And they're like, are we getting checked for lice? And I was like, damn, they didn't even call my name. And I was like, period, because my hair is coarse right there. So I'm so glad that I will never have to deal with that. Lice being racist kind of works in my favor. And I'm okay with that.
I didn't know that lice only liked white people because I got lice freshman year of college. You know how embarrassing that is to get lice your freshman year of college?
Chance got chicken pox in college from a hot tub. Sorry, Chance.
That's so funny. No, I don't know why. Like, I don't know what crackhead energy that I had. Where did I get it from? I don't understand. I mean, I was sleeping with some freaky people at the time. So not freaky, like, kinky freaky, but freaky, like, oh, I probably shouldn't have done that. Freaky. So that's probably where that came from.
My thing is kind of like, if my kids have lice, you need to find somewhere to go because I'm not picking that stuff out. That's nasty.
I know. As a parent, think about everything you have to do. You have to, like, rub mayonnaise in their hair or something. I don't even know how you do that. I just used a shampoo and it came out.
You, like, use, like, a little comb. You, like, comb all of them out.
No.
We find you a staycation somewhere and they're going to do it for me because I'm not doing that.
I don't know what it is about concerts and stuff, but I love concerts. I love live music, but my anxiety is peak at all times because something always bad happens. Like, I went to this Mount Joy concert in Central Park and the concert started at 7 p.m. These people are awesome. They were not late. They were there up on the stage singing at 7 p.m., and this group of guys are in front of me. And one of the guys takes a hit of a joint. No moshing is going on here, by the way.
But this guy in front of me. Moshing to Mount Joy.
No. This guy in front of me takes a hit of a joint. He's with like five of his guy friends. And he drops. Immediately drops to the ground. And then his friends pick him up and just let him stand there again. And Zach taps, my boyfriend taps him on the shoulder and goes, hi, he needs to like go to the medical tent. He does not look good. I mean, he just turned, you know how books say like, oh, he turned a nasty shade of green and then threw up everywhere. Yeah, that's the shade of green he was. Like, he looked like his eyes rolling in the back of his head. He was like stumbling and they were like, no, what are you talking about? He's fine. And then he falls again and Zach is like, actually get him out of here. This is how bad he was. two people had to get his arms, and two people had it. So four people in total had to carry him out of the middle of the concert venue to the medical tent. That's my thing about men. I'm like, no, he is not okay. Why? Like, if that ever happened to you, I would, like, if you experience maybe a quarter of those symptoms, I would start crying and go get, like, a security guard. Like, that's so, I don't even know what it is about men where they're like, oh, yeah, like, he's fine. He can sit here and, like, what are you, oh, I was so mad.
That happened at, I went to the Drake concert last week. Mm-hmm. And this guy, I was, like, on the floor, so it's, like, general admission. And this guy, like, passes out on the ground. And no one does anything. And finally, people, like, are, like, waving their flashlights trying to get, like, medical attention to him. The guy gets up. They escort him out. I am not kidding you. 5 minutes later, he comes back with a beer. I was like, hello? Your face used to be on the ground, like, 5 minutes ago. But I think, and this inspired me from the Drake concert, there needs to be, like, a concert etiquette class that you're supposed to take. Because, number one, at the Drake concert, so many things were happening. First, there was a group of guys in front of me who, like, literally shoved me to the ground to get in front of me. And I was like, you are a 35-year-old man, and it's Drake. This is for the girls. Back up, number one. Two, he wasn't even looking at Drake. He was turned around to his friends, singing every single word. And I was like, are you here? You just play that in your car if that's what you're going to do. And ill, at one moment, he turns to his friend and goes, I'm so hard right now. And I was like, oh, I never needed to know that information. Thank you.
He did not say that.
Barbie was like, even if you did feel that, why are you telling everybody your business? And then these two girls, who are definitely like groupies, because they're dressed in like, they have like the same thing on as like all the other girls in Drake's section. These women are from the Amazonian Amazon.
Were they like 7 feet tall?
Like 7 foot, 900 million inches tall. And they have heels on. And they're standing right in front of me. Part of me looks at her, I was like, girl. And she also has her phone on FaceTime for the concert, like showing them the concert. And then she would like hang up, put her camera on, turn it to herself, and then herself singing like the words. And I was like, number one, your flashlight is blinding me. Number two, you are 900 feet tall. Please go to the back. Why are you? You can see from 15 miles away. I cannot see, and I'm two rows behind, you know? So, yeah, I need people to get it together because we're struggling, the shorties.
Agreed. Speaking of that whole situation, did you see that viral video about that guy at the Adele concert?
Who was standing up.
Yeah, that was standing up, and I felt so bad. Oh, my God. Like, that's different because it's Adele, and, like, everybody had a paid-for seat. Like, it's not a standing concert, but... Or there wasn't standing room. It was a seated concert. But it was so sad because everybody in the front was standing, like in the front, kind of like half of the ground floor. Everybody was standing. Yeah. He just happened to be in the back. And this poor baby sweet angel was just trying to have a good time. And all the people in the back, like old ass women and men, which is so odd, were coming up to him being like, be considerate, there are people behind you. And I felt so bad. And Adele, it got so out of hand. Like so many people came up to him. That Adele had to stop the concert to, like, say something. Be like, stop bothering this boy, this poor boy. So many people have been coming up to him since I've been on. I don't mean to be offensive with my British accent. I know it's bad. But that's what she said. She was like, leave him alone. Aw, I felt so bad.
And the funniest part is I watched that video, like, six times before I realized that everyone was talking about him trying to stand. I thought it was Abby Lee Miller. That was like doing it in the beginning, and I was like,
the first woman who says something. Yep.
So that's why I kept watching the video. And then I realized, I read the comments, they were like, oh my God, no, you're trying to stand up. And I was like, oh, I didn't even notice that. I was looking at Abby Lee Miller. That's all I saw. Yeah.
That is so fun. Because that's something Abby Lee Miller would do too. Also, she's so funny in that wheelchair, not to be offensive, but she rolls. Like she goes, like she, that's the fastest wheelchair I've ever seen in my life. It's like faster than a car.
It reminded me when we went to Moulin Rouge for my birthday. Some of these Broadway ushers, they're like, so... the power goes straight to their head.
Yeah.
Like, a woman would, like, take her phone out to check the time. This man would launch from the depths of, I don't know
what. He'd spawn.
With his flashlight. He was running so fast to tell this woman to put her phone away that he tripped up the stairs with his flashlight.
I remember that.
We are in the middle of the show. He's like, put your phone away. She was like, I'm literally checking the time. He's like, put it away. I was like, is it really, truly, honestly that serious?
I can never take somebody seriously in an argument when they say the same thing twice and slower the second time. Does that make sense? Like, it's very TV show cringy to me. Someone goes, do you understand? Do you understand? Why are you being so cringy?
Like, no, that's, I would have so to laugh. Funny. But sometimes it eats when you say it twice because you'd be like, wow.
I feel like you could do it though.
Yeah.
You could probably have it.
Like the way about you.
Je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi.
I gotta have a little je ne sais quoi.
You know?
No, but some people cannot do it. It's really, really crazy. I don't know. Also, so you know how when some people get mad, their lips get really tiny, like their tongue.
The butthole mouth.
I can't stand that either because you know you lost the argument if you did that. You know what I mean?
And you know what really betrays me?
What?
And I don't know how I'm going to fix this because I do plan on being a lawyer. When I get into an argument, I won't even be upset. And like, I could definitely be winning, but the thoughts of yelling at me makes me upset. So I start crying.
No, you have two modes in an argument because I've seen Sydney get into arguments. We've never, thank God, I literally would rather, I think, throw myself out this window than get in an argument with Sydney because I know I would lose. That's number one. Number two is Sydney.
Nice thing you've ever said to me.
Of course. Sydney has two modes. She either cries, or it's like hysterically crying for no reason, or she starts hysterically laughing for no reason. I remember this one time, me, her, and all of our ex-roommates were in like this big fucking screaming blowout fight, right? And Sydney and I were just kind of sitting there, and I remember I was cooking dinner, so I was chopping broccoli, and Sydney was trying so hard not to cry that she was staring at the broccoli, but then the fact that I was just chopping broccoli in the middle of this really heated discussion made us cry laughing, and we were, oh my god, everyone got so mad at us
because it's so awkward. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah,
like one time my ex got like in my face, like I was, my back was against a wall and he was like screaming at me, and then I like took his, and I was like actually really sad because I was like, why are you yelling at me so hard, like I didn't do anything. But then I like stopped to think about it, like I became a third person, like I became a fly on the wall. I just looked at his face, and then he was, like, spitting, and his face was really red. I just started laughing so hard.
Did he get really mad?
He got so mad. He was like, stop laughing right now. And I was like, it's not even funny. Like, I don't even know, like, what I'm laughing about, but I can't stop. And he started crying. So,
well, I think it did its job.
Well, he's on vacation with his girlfriend now, so everything worked out for him. Every time I open Facebook, it's just my exes, and I'm like,
oh,
okay.
Oh, my God. That is so funny. That's so funny you still have Facebook. Because why do you go on Facebook?
When I open Facebook, it's like my cousin's doing weird things I don't want to see. Mm-hmm. Or like my mom will do like one of those like meme things where it's like, put your face here to like see a trend.
Your mom is chronically on Facebook.
My mom is chronically on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. We love you, Tammy.
I'll be like walking on the street. She'll be on live. I'm like, girl, what are you living right now? But yeah, she loves her Facebook. I only go on Facebook to stalk people from my past. But it's so hard because, like, I usually date older men. So, like, it's so easy to stalk them on Facebook. Because
they still post. Because
they still they post everything that you could ever want about their lives. Like, I'll be like, I wonder what this person's up to. Open Facebook. They're dating this person. They're here at this time, at this date, doing this thing with this person. Got my answer. But with people I'm seeing now, because they're, like, young and, like, mysterious and whatever.
Yeah.
I got to, like, do a couple extra steps. And, you know, it's taxing on my heart, my soul, my brain, and my time.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny because I know that you, obviously no one wants to do those extra steps, but you're so good at it. Like, I remember, oh my God, this one time we were, I don't know what was happening, but we saw this guy and I was like, he looks so familiar. Sydney took out her, I don't know what you did, but you took out your phone, did a little, and then in 4 seconds, you knew his name, social security number, his house. I was like, what in the world?
I will say it's a little bit scary.
Yeah.
And it's because I was chronically online as a child.
Tumblr.
But the thing is that, do you know how upsetting it is when I do know information about someone? Like, I know where they went to school, I know their name, and I can't find them. Like, you have no trace of yourself on the internet. I have, like, a boring name, like John Smith, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna hit a rock and find people that name. The thing is, like, I'm so chronically online, and no one in the world, no one in this entire universe of 8 billion people has my name spelled my way. That you don't have to know anything about me. You could know just my first name or just my last name or just my school and find everything in the world about me. Like, I know people do, like, background checks for work. So I'll be like, oh, my God, I'm going to Google me and see what I find. It's my Wattpad. It's my story from – my short stories from middle school.
It's like Harry Styles.
It's my Visco.
Took my shirt off.
My bikini pictures. Like, I was like, oh, my God. Okay, well. Luckily, it's nothing bad. It's just embarrassing.
No, I do think, though, that, you know, law firms in particular and just, like, you know – doctor firm, just like I feel like big corporations in general know by now that like we're gonna post bikini pictures on Instagram and that's not a factor in anything anymore. Do you know what I mean? Or just like anything of the sort. But I get it. It's like, yeah, that is, I look my name up and it is a dog trainer who is famous apparently, but she has my exact same name, same spelling.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Now that we've talked for 3 minutes.
Now that we've talked about the rent about literally nothing. Guys, we've lived in this apartment for actually a year now. We'll be in here in a year for 2 days. And I don't have a single decoration in my room because I have a fear of commitment. And every time I like a poster, I'm like, wait, what if I don't like it tomorrow? So I haven't decorated my room yet. And now I'm like forcing myself. So it looks kind of weird. It's just black and white. So I'm like sitting and get decorations. And I'm shopping online for them right now because, you know, I like to multitask. And I can't commit. The thing is, when I find a man, I'm like, I love you, marry me. So, like, why can't I have that commitment with posters? I don't know.
No, it's with certain things. I mean, I was talking to a high school friend about this. I was saying how, for me, it's so weird. Like, this is not the same thing, but I feel like we as modern women kind of view relationships, friends, and, like, everything in between as totally different sectors in our life. Like, we're really good at categorization because we might have a fear of commitment of putting decorations up in our bedroom, but why are we so, like, open to love? And, like, for me, it's, like, why am I so initially pessimistic and untrustworthy when it comes to men? And why am I so much harder on, like, my partner than I am on my friends? It's, you know what I mean? I feel like as women in 2023, I feel like that's a thing we're kind of forced to do, which is weird. It's interesting to think about. That might be a good episode topic.
It's like, my posters don't tell me I'm cute and snuggle me at night.
Yeah.
That's what I want. Or I just hang a man on my wall. Actually, that sounded so bad. Never mind. Like, yeah, I said that. Okay. But yeah,
she didn't mean it, you guys. You know, it's all fun and games here. So the topic of today is inspired by this really, really viral video that went pretty crazy on TikTok. This was like 2 weeks ago. I think this video was maybe more than that. But it is an interviewer talking with Tom Holland, who, if you don't know, the impossible Spider-Man, the cutest little smush of all time. He got, he's dating Zendaya still, I think. I hope that's still a thing. You don't think that's PR, do you? I really hope that's real.
That they're dating?
No, that him and Zendaya are dating.
PR?
Not, you think?
No, they're for lifers.
That's what I thought. Okay, that's what I was asking. I really, yeah.
Because what would they be PRing for? He's literally like quitting acting, he said, kind of. But also, they're just so in love. Makes me want to like, oh my God, the way he talks about her. I'm like, oh my God, let me go shave my head. And they're so private. It makes my heart. They just seem so genuinely happy. And I like that they like to live their life privately instead of being so like about their relationship. But yeah, I don't know. It's cute to me.
It's interesting to see celebrity couples and the different dynamics because, like, Hailey Bieber and Justin,
they're never going to the same place. I'm always like, where are you going that you're and just like that?
Oh, yeah. So this interview was really, really awesome, and it went viral on TikTok for numerous reasons. One, because Tom Holland is America's treasure, and two is because the way he described not just – a plight of alcoholism, but also his sober journey was really exciting and I think was a very appealing to a lot of people. Because when you think, at least I know this in my case, when you think alcoholics, especially I have alcoholics in my family, it's like when you think alcoholics, you think of, or at least this is me, people who are drinking from like 9 a.m. to when they go to bed, getting blacked out like every day. Every single time they drink, they have a very serious consequence to their actions, such as DUIs, injuries, et cetera, et cetera. When in reality, alcoholism is way more common than that, and I think it affects people in different ways, and every person's alcoholism or sober journey is completely, completely different. Like, just because that's Tom's alcoholic journey doesn't mean that that's somebody else or whatever. And it's really interesting because he provided a whole new perspective, and I took a class on drugs and alcohol in college, and this was even different from anything like that because obviously the course was very fact-based, objective, but he was talking very subjectively about his own personal experience. Essentially, if you haven't seen the video, which I'm sure that you have, he was saying how it's not like he was one of those stereotypical, very heavy drinkers that I had just mentioned. It was, for him, he had just come back from a long, very booze-heavy vacation and was like, okay, I'm going to do a sober month because like I drank a lot on this vacation and no other reason. He did a sober month, and then he realized upon that month's completion, not only was he just really looking forward to the time when he could drink again, which he was like, maybe I shouldn't be doing that, but he was also noticing how center and focused his life was on alcohol. He was really missing like the whole social drinking. He was missing like, oh, you know, I had a really stressful day, let me have like a drink. He was missing a lot of that, and that longing and desire was very central in that month. So he made the active decision to be, or proactive decision to be, completely sober for the rest of his life, which I think is extremely admirable. And from that interview, Sydney and I were talking about it. We love to talk about sober curiosity, and just Sydney and I always strive to be healthier in our drinking habits, you know, ourselves. So we wanted to do an episode on sober, or like being sober and sober curiosity, because, you know, we've been talking, this is a very like relationship centered podcast also, and we are more than men, we are more than that. Not that we've gotten any negative feedback, but we thought that this would be a really interesting like topic to talk about, just because it affects so many people, especially Sydney and I just coming out of college. It affects a lot of people we're friends with, it affects us, it affects our family and everybody we know. So we thought this could be a really relatable thing to talk about.
And I think one thing that I've talked about a lot recently, like amongst my friends and family, but also I've just noticed in general, is that I feel like our high school time, like it seemed a lot easier to like know when you had a problem with alcohol, because I feel like even in like those little classes we took in high school, I don't know what you called them. It wasn't sex ed, it was like life management they called it. They would be like, oh, alcoholism means that like you get drunk every day and like you're violent. And like while those are aspects that could be, that are like of some people who are alcoholics, I feel that alcohol has become so ingrained in our like everyday social life that it's kind of hard now, I think, to recognize when you do have a problem with alcohol, just because it's become so normalized. Like, and I thought about this because we are literally making alcoholic water. Why is that necessary? Like, 2008 era, like, all there was like hard liquor, like vodka, gin, tequila, whatever. Now we have alcoholic lemonade, we have frozen stuff, we have Trulies, we have White Claws, we have hard water. Like, I feel like there's just so much available, and it's kind of like pushed at us that people don't realize, like, why are we craving alcoholic water? But also, I just feel like, even in, especially in New York, like the culture of like happy hour and like ladies drink free until 9, like it's just so encouraged that I feel like drinking has become like a normalized part of our routine. And like, just because I think it's normalized doesn't mean that it's still not a problem. And like, my friends and I talked about this a lot recently, because we were like, why is it when we hang out with our friends, it's always around the guise of alcohol? So like, recently we've been doing a lot of like girls' nights and like game nights, or going out where like it's not centered around drinking. And I tell you, I have such a better time. And I'll get into like my own personal story about like sober curiosity and not drinking, that like my journey through it. But that's just like my little introduction into like why that's been on my mind recently.
Yeah, before, because me and Sydney have both been in this episode talking about, like, we've been coining the term alcoholism, and I do want to define it in case you don't know, or before you get yelled at, just, like, as a disclaimer. Alcoholism is defined by alcohol dependence, which is the body's physical inability to stop drinking in the presence of alcohol cravings. Individuals with an alcohol addiction may go to extreme measures such as stealing, lying, hiding alcohol, drinking household cleaners that contain alcohol, and other unhealthy behaviors to obtain alcohol due to cravings and the fear of withdrawal. In the absence of alcohol, these individuals can experience alcohol withdrawals, which are characterized by agitation, tremors, hot flashes, increased heart rate and blood pressure, nausea and vomiting, and seizures. Withdrawing from alcohol can be lethal in this case, and therefore individuals should seek professional help when trying to quit their alcoholism habits. So that is from Pinelands Recovery Center of Medford. And I also want to plug an alcohol addiction hotline. Oh my God, I'm looking this up on like a incognito strip so that my internet does not think I have an alcohol problem. Okay, hold on. So, okay. Nope, that's for New York City. Where is it? Hold on. Okay, here we go. There is a national drug and alcohol treatment hotline that's 1-800-622-HELP or 4357 in case you need that resource. There's also this great resource that I learned about in one of my drug classes that I took in college. It's called Moderation Management. So there is a difference also between like alcoholism and heavy drinking, like scientifically, which was also on that same article from the Pinelands Recovery Center of Medford. Pretty random, but it's true. And for stuff like that, like if you're thinking about sober curiosity, if you're trying to moderate your drinking, but if you don't think it's reached levels of like AA or an addiction per se, being a heavy drinker or having a dependence on alcohol is still an issue, and it's still a very serious issue. So I would recommend help for that. This program called Moderation Management. And it's really cool. What they do is they put you in groups, and I don't have any personal experience with this, nor do I know anybody who's gone through this program, but I learned a lot about it a couple years ago, and it still stands today. It's really, really cool. It's all online. It's all digital. You don't have to go anywhere to do it. They put you in groups with like-minded people to try and moderate your alcohol management. So if you don't want to cut alcohol out of your life completely, it takes you through this program to like lower your dependence on it. And it's really cool. The first month you go through is completely sober, so no drinking for 1 month. And after that, it starts to like wean you back on the substance, socially and etc., if you feel like that's what's best for you. So I just kind of wanted to plug those resources before we continue the rest of the episode.
And like important point that you touched on that I feel like is also a thing is that it's kind of twofold, because on one hand I feel like we're in a generation where we know just so much and we have names for so many things that like you talk to literally anyone and they can say like, oh, I've been diagnosed with like X, Y, and Z. And I feel like on one hand, like we are very diagnosis dependent society, but on the other hand, so many things go undiagnosed because we like to self-diagnose. And I think that, like Sarah said, like alcoholism does have like its own definition, but like from my own personal view, because I'm not a doctor or a scientist or a therapist or a psychologist or a psychiatrist, my degree is in Sydney Winter and knowledge of knowledge.
And that is all the degree she needs, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. All my degree.
At this university, we got knowledge. Hey. Is that I think that like alcoholism or alcohol dependency really is a scale. And like on one end of that is sober, on the other end is alcoholism. But like a very big part in the middle that I think a lot of our generation falls into, which I think is still a problem, like just from my point of view and like how I experience everyday life, is like heavy drinking. And I feel like people might still think that means like, oh, I gotta like crush six pack of beer like just for the fun of it. But like I think it manifests itself in so many ways. And like I think that dependency on alcohol can be a social thing, it can be an anxiety thing, it can be a depression thing without necessarily being alcoholism. Like I think a lot of people, and I think this is like the best example I can think of for it, is like let's say you go through a breakup or you had a stress day at work and like your first thought is I need a drink. Like that's not in itself a problem, but I think when it becomes a pattern of relying on substances, whether that's drugs, alcohol, vaping, smoking, like whatever, if that's like becoming the first stop to quote unquote solving issues rather than facing them or thinking through them or finding like healthier ways to cope, for me, like that's the beginning or like center place of like alcohol problems. And I think that for me, I've never been a heavy drinker. I have my mom's alcohol level tolerance? Of dependency, like tolerance. Yeah. I have my mom's alcohol tolerance where like I have one drink and I'm like, oh, woo-wee, the room is spinning. So, and I didn't drink in high school. So I think that I was introduced to alcohol a lot later in college. And because of that, like I never really got into heavy drinking. So like drinking for me in my heavy was like maybe 3 or 4 drinks when I would go out with my friends. But like I would never really drink throughout the week unless it was like a glass of wine at dinner or like wine with friends. But like I never drink alone or like I would never like hammer 12 shots in the night. Like that just was never my personality. But at the same time, I realized that earlier this year, or like the end of last year, that like every single time I would hang out with my friends, drinking was involved. And like maybe it was like 2 times a week or like Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And like while that might be normal drinking for some people, for me, I just didn't like the way it made me feel. Like I would only have 2 drinks and like maybe 1 shot when I would go out, but like I would still like wake up feeling gross about myself and like just like having a headache or like feeling nauseous, or I felt like my body comp started to change because of how much alcohol was like introduced into like my everyday life. Just because like I don't know what it is about law school, is that law school is like a very alcohol heavy like atmosphere to be in, because we have happy hours every night with firms, we have happy hours for school, we have an open bar at every single event, and those events are daily. So I feel like if I wasn't drinking, people would ask me why, or like I couldn't just have a Coke because I didn't feel like having wine every single night. I just don't enjoy doing that. So for me, that was like my first step into like sober curiosity. And for about 4 or 5 months earlier this year, I just stopped drinking. Not because I felt like I needed to, or because I had to, or because I had a problem, just because I hated how much I had become like a part of everyday life, or like it was an expectation that like I had to be drinking out with my friends or had to be drinking at all these events. So I just stopped drinking. And when I tell you, I one, lost a lot of weight, which like wasn't the intention, but was just like a side effect of it. But two, I just felt so much better about myself. And I feel like my mental health was better. My coping abilities were better. I just felt healthier. And the way that I didn't intend to be like sober or anything. I just didn't have an interest in drinking. And like now when I go out, I might maybe have 1 or 2 drinks. But most of the time I literally just order a Coke at the bar, and I have such a better night knowing that like I'm in control of my thoughts. I'm not wasting like $100 a night on alcohol, and I'm still able to like have a good time, go out with my friends, wake up the next morning at 8 and go about my day. So like for me, it was never necessarily like an issue of like, oh, I have a drinking problem. I just think that self-recognition is a hard thing to do, but for me it was like I just don't want to have alcohol be like such a big part of my life, so I'm gonna step away. And it was easy to do, or easier than I thought it would be. And like making adjustments now that I'm like still going out and being social has been like fine. There's been no problem with it. But I think it's just interesting how much it's become like a daily part of conversation on TikTok and social media about like drinking and how ingrained it is in our like everyday society.
That's awesome. I love hearing your story. And I really love 2 points that you brought up. One, because I just love it. And 2, because it segues into my personal story, or my personal journey with alcohol. The first is when you were like, I didn't feel like I was a heavy drinker. I didn't feel like I had an alcohol dependency, and I was still sober curious. And I really do want to make that disclaimer, because if you clicked on this episode, or if you are thinking about being sober curious, that doesn't necessarily mean you have a drinking problem. That just means you're engaging in healthy habits for yourself. And just like, in general, you're trying to like make an active, healthy choice. And I think like you can still be healthy and drink alcohol, but I just kind of wanted to let you know that if you are thinking about being sober curious, or thinking about doing a sober month, or thinking about doing a sober week, or looking to cut down your drinking habits in general, that doesn't mean you have an issue. And Sydney and I are in the same boat, because look at Sydney, for example. She was never a heavy drinker and still decided she wanted to be healthier or minimize her drinking practices. So I think that's a perfect example. And the second is that I love how you said, we touched on this at the beginning of the episode, but when you mentioned that it becomes a gateway or an issue when you start leaning on alcohol as a crutch whenever you're upset or you go through a breakup or you have a bad day, I love that point, because this kind of leads into my story. Something very traumatic happened to me my freshman year of college, and I drank in high school only my senior year, and I drank on and off freshman year of college as well. But something extremely traumatic happened my second semester that caused me to go to parties more, go out more, go to bars more. Like, I'm talking every day of the week, like, go out and heavily drink. And I was leaning on alcohol as a crutch, among with other things like nicotine and marijuana and stuff like that. For me, I quit smoking marijuana and nicotine cold turkey because that, to me, was, like, very... It was very obvious and apparent and situational why I was doing those two things. Alcohol has always been like a little more of a player in my life and something that I thought I could manage a little healthier. So I do want to disclaim that I didn't like get help or I didn't have a therapist at the time to kind of talk through my, what I thought was like leaning on alcohol a little too much. But here's what I did. Here are some habits that I kind of engaged in. And again, I'm not a doctor, like Cindy said. Like, I don't have a degree in this stuff. But here's stuff that I did that I thought really moderated my drinking. First is I would set myself active goals. Like, I would be, and again, it's like same thing like I said earlier. It's just like, just because you do this, you don't have to be like me. It doesn't have to be because like something happened to you or you feel like you're drinking too much. Anybody can do this, and I highly encourage you to do it no matter what your drinking habits are. So one is setting a goal. I would always set myself active goals like, okay, I'm going to go out this weekend and only have one drink. I'm going to go out to dinner and only have one glass of wine. And that really helped me. Two was that I actually looked into, and I know you have, like a lot of people have to do this for college, like Cindy and I have to do it. And I know this stuff's really boring, but it was actually really helpful to see like exactly the scientific measure. You know that alcohol thing we had to go through when we started NYU? Or is like healthy drinking practices. Yeah, literally. And I know it can be boring sometimes, but it was actually really interesting. And it, looking this up and doing research my freshman year kind of reminded me of this, is that know how much is in one drink. Because like, just because a bartender pours you a shot doesn't necessarily mean that that's one shot. You know, some bartenders pour like half shots. Some bartenders pour like, fill a whole solo cup with tequila. Do you know what I mean? So I think being knowledgeable about the scientific measurements that goes into the drinks that you are literally putting into your body was extremely helpful for me and made me realize that like, wow, I might've been drinking more than I even thought I was. Also, in my experience, eating definitely lessened those like, oh, I need to lean on alcohol, because I was just like eating more and eating healthier and eating like more regularly, like having a regular eating schedule. Because after the thing that happened to me, I kind of stopped eating, and that I think increased my alcohol cravings. I was like really on a very wacky schedule with my eating habits and drinking water and sleep. So those are the three things that I think once I got those in check, it was a lot easier to like maintain my drinking habits. And then also setting a budget. Like Sydney mentioned, not drinking as much saves you a ton of money. It's like the money factor. Do you know what I mean? Also, first is your health. And then second of all, it is saving money. Alcohol is so expensive, especially at restaurants and bars. They upcharge you so much, and regulating your drinking can really save your money, which is awesome. Also, one more thing that I just remembered is counting your drinks. Like, make an active mental note to be like, okay, this is my second drink, this is my third drink, because Sydney was earlier talking about control. That gives you control when you're like, you're setting a goal and then you keep it in check. It helps so much. And I promise I did those because, like, you know, what happened to me happened and then COVID happened. So it forced me to like go home and really take a hard look in the mirror, which was really hard to do. But then I came back to New York City, a city that literally perpetuates going out. Like Cindy said, you step out of the door and alcohol is like shoved in your face, basically. So coming back to the city with those steps in mind really, really helped me. And I think it could help you too. Not you, Sydney, but you, like the listener.
Oh, yeah.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh, my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global.
When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And I think like the one like train of thought that like really pushed me towards like wanting to be sober curious for the few months that I was, and I guess I kind of still am, but the train of thought was like I would be out, and I had been thinking about this for a while after I saw like a Twitter discourse about hard water that I was talking about earlier, like what are we doing. But the train of thought was I would be like actively thinking like, why am I drinking right now? So I'd be out with friends or at lunch in the middle of the day or going shopping with friends or whatever, and like let's say I got like a glass of wine or I got like an Aperol spritz or whatever, I would like very much genuinely think to myself, why am I drinking? And there would never be a reason. Like, it's not because, oh, like I wanted to like enjoy my night and just feel like a little bit more comfortable, or like I had a taste for it. I was literally only doing it because my friends were, or because there was a happy hour deal and everyone else was getting one. Like, I never actually needed to have a drink. I think that's one thing that pushed me towards like wanting to just stop. And like, I don't buy alcohol ever. Like, I don't go to the store to buy alcohol. I don't ever like drink by myself or like drink at home. So like, I think I was having a battle with like, do I have an issue or a dependency, or like, how do I characterize like what I feel like I'm going through? And so I think looking into sober curiosity and realizing that like, it's not like I'm going sober because I have an issue, but going sober because I just realized like I didn't want alcohol to play as big of a part in my life as it did, was like a big thing for me. And realizing that like it became like kind of like a social crutch, and I didn't want to have anything in my life that I feel like I needed to depend on. So that's like the first steps for me. But I also follow someone on TikTok who was also in law school, who was talking about her journey with alcoholism and an addiction to alcohol. And she was saying that it started off like as any college person would, like you drink beer and you go out with your friends, you like drink at home, like whatever. It was like very normal to her. And then going to law school and becoming an influencer, like being in that space, it's like every single event you go to is alcohol surrounded. Like, they have themed drinks, they have buy one get one free, they have happy hour, whatever. Like, everything she went to just encouraged alcohol, and she felt like it got to a point where like she couldn't go to one of those events or like interact in those kind of spaces without having a drink in her hand. And she was like, I was talking to someone about my experience, and the therapist was like, you might have an addiction to alcohol. And in her mind, she was like, I had family members who were alcoholics, and like they were always like very violent and loud, and like there were like very clear signs that alcohol was playing like a negative role in their behavioral tendencies. But she was like, for her, she still acted like herself. It was just more so like she realized that she didn't realize how much she was drinking, so she went sober. And she got a really large following on TikTok talking about being sober in legal spaces and as an influencer, and like things that she was picking up, like habits, whether it was like working out or journaling and things like that, that she helped felt replaced that feeling of needing to always be drinking. And she did a video a few weeks ago, which is kind of why, or a few days ago, which is why I brought this topic up to do on the podcast, where she decided to break her sobriety. And she had been sober for, I think, a year and a half or 2 years before making the video. And when she posted that she was no longer sober, people were like really upset in the comments talking about like, oh, like you were a source of inspiration for me, or you made me realize that like I might have an issue with alcohol, even though like to me it seems very normal. And she was like, well, one, you have to realize like people who are influencers or people who are in the public space, they're doing these things for themselves. They're not doing it because they need to be your therapist
or your sponsor
or your guide or your sponsor. Like, everyone's on their own personal journey. And while it is good to like have people you can go through these things with, at the same time, like, your sobriety or like your desire to be healthier and like make healthier and better choices for yourself can't be tied to anyone else. It has to be tied to like your own desire to like want to be healthier or get healthier or be better. But at the same time, she was like, my goal was never to never have alcohol again. It was to distance myself from alcohol for a long enough period of time where I could like learn how it was changing me or like reconnect with myself on a healthier basis and like gain healthier habits before I introduce alcohol back into my life again. But now she's like, I don't drink during the week. I don't drink alone. I don't drink at home. I don't go buy alcohol. But if I'm out with friends, I can have a drink and understand that like it's not going to become an issue again because I've done the work I needed to do to understand the underlying problems. And so I think that just like stood out to me a lot because I think that we always hear narratives about alcoholism and what that looks like, sobriety and what that looks like. And people think it's a kind of like a lifelong journey. But for her, she was like, it doesn't have to be like you never drink alcohol again. It can be more so learning about its role, the role it plays in your life, understanding that like even though it's hard to admit, it's the hardest thing to admit that you might have a problem. And that kind of applies to everything, like whether you're depressed or whether you might have an eating disorder or like anything that I feel like has stigma around in society. It's hard to admit to yourself, but the first step is always admitting. And I think just like realizing that it is like a step-by-step journey and you can like introduce those things back into your life in a healthier way, whether it's like eating healthier, drinking less, exercising more, etc., just leading to like healthier, more sustainable habits is so important. So I think that that video like really stood out to me for that reason, and I admire her even more because of it, you know.
I completely— do you have her username to plug?
Yeah, it's Haley Marie. I don't know the exact username, but that's her name. I'll look it up.
That's awesome though. While you're looking for that, I think the main point, or one of the main points in this episode and beyond, is that everyone's journey in general is going to be different. You know, as a society, we do love to label things, but everyone's journey with alcohol is completely different, let alone everything else like mental illness, etc. And like studying, sleeping, eating, drinking, like water even. It's like everybody has a different like sense of and necessity scale that I think it's just— it's really hard for other people to understand. It's like, you are not me, I am not you. And I think if you are sober curious or like kind of going through this journey or even want to like lessen your drinking habits at all, that's the first thing you have to understand. It's like, people can give you advice all they want, but it's at the— like, but also again, one thing that I do want to say is like, while no one necessarily knows your individual journey, please do listen to people who love and care about you, because like Cindy said, it is so hard to like look in the mirror and admit you have an issue. But when the people who are around you most and love you and see what you're doing are telling you that you might have an issue, I would say, or that, or just like giving you advice on stuff that you should do in general, or telling you to break up with your cheating boyfriend, or telling you to like, oh, maybe you should drink less this week, like just something like that, I say listen. I mean, these are the people who are just like have nothing— these are people who have nothing but love in their hearts for you. And as much as they don't necessarily understand your personal journey or like what your body necessarily needs, if enough people are telling you that you need to change some aspect of what you are doing or of your actions, it's probably true on some level.
I think like it's always hard to have these conversations. And like, I think about this. If your friends are overcoming what's obviously something that's very awkward to bring up, because obviously you don't want to like— it, even if it is, whether it's about a boyfriend or the way another friend's treating them or alcohol or food, like relationship with food, whatever it is, it's always hard to have those conversations to be like, hey, like, I recognize that this could potentially be an issue from the outside. I just want to like let you know that I see that it could be an issue, and like I want to be here to help you, etc., like whatever it is. That those conversations are so hard to have, both to hear and to give. So I feel like if your friends are like taking the time and like getting over that awkwardness to try and help you, that like take that into account, you know. Obviously, I think our first like instinct is to be defensive, because like we said, like admitting you have a problem is always the hardest part, or even recognizing that you have one. So if, like, just remember that, because I know like when it came to relationships, my friends would always be like, girly, what are you doing? Like, we're all concerned. I'd be like, oh my god, you don't know him. Yeah. I think like being on the other side of things, like
I thank them so much for doing so. And like, I had a really unhealthy problem with food at the beginning of this year, where like I was drastically losing weight in a very unhealthy way, and I became like really obsessed with working out, and like I wasn't eating anything. I had awful anxiety. I wasn't drinking, because like literally if I had one drink I would be like extremely physically sick, to the point where like I would have to go to the doctor and be like, there's something wrong with me, because like I can't keep down food, I can't keep down alcohol, I can't keep down water. And so I feel like I knew there was something wrong, but it took my friends stepping in and being like, girl, you need to get help, or like, it could be this, it could be that, like, we're concerned for you. Because like, I think I saw myself every day, so I didn't realize how much weight I had been losing, or like how it had been affecting like my behavior and like my socialness, my anxiety. But I think having friends who like cared enough or were observant enough to like pull me aside and be like, we're really concerned for you, I think realizing that like they got over all the awkwardness to do so meant that it was serious. I think that like putting my pride aside, or like the awkwardness aside, and like actually listening to what they had to say was so important, and is what helped me get over all my issues, go get checked out, etc. So I think just keep that in mind when it comes to like having these like difficult conversations with friends or family or partners or whoever it might be.
Totally. It really does take, I think, good friends to say something or just like help you out in any way they can, because you know, friends don't necessarily, I mean, if they do, that's great, but friends don't necessarily have like degrees, and nor are they therapists, and you shouldn't treat them as such. However, they can be really huge supportive pillars to lean on in place of whatever you are leaning on that might not be the healthiest for you, i.e. alcohol, drugs, etc. So like, for example, when I was going through that period where I was like, man, I'm drinking way too much, I need to stop, I need to chill, Sydney and I tried to do a dry month, and like we talked about doing stuff like that. So it really does take friends to be really supportive, and family and stuff. And if you don't have a support system, therapy is always out there. Or if you don't feel like you have a solid enough support system to lean on in this scenario, therapy is awesome. There are a lot of free therapy sites you can use, and hotlines like the number I mentioned earlier in this podcast, et cetera, et cetera. One thing I forgot to say, and I know Sydney is going to give me a stamp of approval on this one, is the ability to say no. Because a lot of times drinking problems and drinking dependencies, at least in my personal experience and like what I see from other people, and like this also has a factor in Sydney and I's personal journeys with alcohol, like starts with going out and being social, going to frat parties, et cetera, et cetera. So at whatever age you are, because this is applicable to all ages, all levels of school, et cetera, is that you need to be able to confidently say no. Do you know what I mean? Not just like no, not just like maybe, like no. If you set a goal for yourself and you don't want to drink tonight, or if you don't want to, I don't know, take a hit of the joint, or if you don't want to like do the line of coke, or if you don't want to go to the party, or if you don't want to kiss this guy, like the confident power of saying no, fuck politeness, shout out to My Favorite Murder, because that's their slogan, it goes such a long way, and it really does make you feel empowered. It's scary at first, at least it was for me, but at the end of the day, not having a hangover is worth it, being overall healthier is worth it, and you are worth it, and that is all I have to say.
And I thought.
Tell us what you think. Tell us.
I thunked. And the thunk just came out of my head. Oh, yeah. When I first started, like, being super curious, like, I literally wouldn't go out because I was like, I'm just going to feel weird, like, being around everyone drinking.
Yeah.
And not being the only one drinking. But it makes the night so much more entertaining. I remember everything everybody did and said the next day.
And, they don't remember. They might not remember.
Yeah, and then at the same time, like, when I go up to the bar, I just order a plain Coke with lime, and it's, like, $4. Like, I can go the whole night and spend $12 on drinks, boom, and I still have a good time, because, like, I can dance, have fun, but also, like, look out for my friends, and, like, remember everything the next day. And I feel like people think it might be hard, but, like, all of that is literally just in our heads. Who's going to care if I'm not drinking? Like, it has nothing to do with them. At the end of the day, like, I'm going to wake up feeling better about myself. I'm going to save money. I'm going to be healthier. Because alcohol, at the end of the day, is bad for you. No matter how much you have, it's bad for you.
It's like a mild poison.
It literally is poisoning your blood. So I think just keeping that in mind, like, I can still drink if I want to. I'll be at a happy hour. Don't get it twisted. But, and, like, I'll have a drink when I go out. But, like, I keep it to one or two, and I still feel great the next day. So I think that was kind of, like, where my head was at, where it currently is at. That's my situation right now. And it feels great. Like, I have no problem with it. I've saved so much money. I feel like I have less drama in my life. Because so much drama is centered around alcohol.
And I don't know, it was kind of good or whatever.
And I want to kind of end on a positive note where I want to list some long-term benefits of moderating your alcohol use. Because again, Cindy and I aren't here telling you have to go sober. Neither of us are sober. And I'm not sober curious, and I never have been. Sydney was for a short period of time, but you know, we're always constant. And like, again, Sydney and I are not perfect. We are constantly trying to figure out ways to moderate our drinking, to moderate like on any unhealthy behaviors, because we all have unhealthy behaviors. We're human. So I think like, that's also just a disclaimer. Like, we're not trying to preach from the choir. We all have things we're trying to work on. But just to end on a positive note, some long-term benefits of moderating your alcohol use include better sleep, stronger immune system, healthy heart, better judgment, better interpersonal relationships, and a stable mood, because alcohol is associated with mood swings, depression, and anxiety. So, like, it is, like, that's a fact. I'm not just saying that for my Sarah brain. So, I just think if that is not enough motivation for you, I would say definitely seek extra help. But if it is, you are on this journey with the rest of us. We love you all, no matter what your situation is. My name's Sarah. That is Sydney. This is Crying in Public. You can listen to us on Spotify, iHeart Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on Instagram at Crying in Public Podcasts. Goodbye.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.